Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, talks are to resume today between the United States and Ukraine in Florida following a meeting between the US and Russia in Moscow to discuss a path to end the war in Ukraine. U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, along with President Donald Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner, spent almost 5 hours with Vladimir Putin on Tuesday, but came out with no outcome on a peace direction for Ukraine. Not so far. Today, Putin is visiting India, a nation that has dramatically increased its use of Russian oil since the invasion of Ukraine and has not condemned that war. And further east in Asia, French President Emmanuel Macron is visiting China, with Ukraine also on the agenda. Dennis Staunton, China correspondent with the Irish Times and author of the Daily Global Briefing newsletter, which you can get online, joins me now. Dennis, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, first of all, does Putin have a particular mission in going to India?
Well, it's a kind of an annual meeting. They tend to alternate it, but they actually haven't had it in person in India for a few years. It's his first visit to India since before the start of the war. But what it's partly to do is to reassert this friendship or this relationship between India and Russia, which has really been very stable for the last 80 years, really since Indian independence. And throughout the war, as you say, despite pressure from the Western powers, India has never condemned the Russian invasion. And in all of the United Nations resolutions, it's tended to abstain on them.
Now, often it's about money, it's about economics, it's about the sale of arms or the sale of energy. So who's doing what in that particular relationship? I mean, is India largely armed by the United States or armed by Russia? And therefore, do we accept that Pakistan has to be armed by the opposite side? Or are they all armed by the same outfit?
It's all quite complicated. Traditionally, India got most of its arms from Russia, and Russia is still the biggest arms supplier, and they're going to do a few deals with about some weapons and weapon systems probably during this visit as well. But over the last 20 years or so, India has been diversifying and getting more weapons from the West. And meanwhile, Pakistan gets a lot of its weapons from China, but also from the U.S., so it's a bit slightly complicated picture. But so the way in which India operates its foreign policy is what they used to call non-alignment. Now they call it multi-alignment, which is they try to get on with everybody. And so they've got good relations with or have had reasonably good relations with the U.S. over the past while. But they've always maintained their relationship with Russia.
Now, how does energy complicate matters even further? Because we know that the Americans were putting sanctions on Russian oil, and yet India has become a massive purchaser of Russian energy.
Yes, India, it imports about 80% of the crude oil that it needs. It needs a lot of it because it's got 1.4 billion people. And until before the Ukraine war, it got most of that oil from the Middle East, and only about 1% came from Russia. But then when the Western sanctions hit the Russian oil industry, they had to drop their prices hugely. And so India then started to buy all of this discounted oil. And so last year, for example, it was something like 35% of their oil imports came from Russia. So now, as you mentioned, the U.S. has sanctioned a couple of the big Russian oil companies. And so those sanctions just came into effect on the 21st of November. Since then, it appears that the Indians have really drastically reduced their imports of Russian oil because they don't want to get caught on this web of American sanctions.
So, I mean, they are punished by America for importing Russian oil, yet China, of course, imports energy from Russia without a similar sanction.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
Yes, this was one of those rather capricious things that that Trump did in August, even before they imposed these sanctions. So the sanctions were imposed on the Russian oil companies. So anybody who buys from these Russian oil companies could be hit from by these sanctions. But Trump also imposed a 25% tariff on India because it was buying this Russian oil. And so Trump said that by doing that, India was prolonging the war in Ukraine. So it's all, at the moment, Trump is, since he met Xi Jinping in Korea a few weeks ago, he's on a kind of something of a charm offensive with China. And so the two of them are negotiating this trade deal. And they're both trying to stay out of each other's way and not antagonize each other. But Trump doesn't seem to have so many qualms about picking on the Indians.
Now, moving to China and Macron visiting China, the question of China's attitude to the war in Ukraine, it also has not condemned Russia for its invasion, although it's always making kind of indifferent statements about peace and how welcome that would be.
Yes, officially China says it's neutral in the war, but it's not really, in that it has given a lot of financial, economic, and diplomatic support to the Russians. And also, it's been supplying not any weapons to Russia, but it has been supplying various things that could be used in the Russian war machine. At least that's the complaint that the West makes. And so there's no question but that it's really neutral on the Russian side. And what for a lot of the time during the war, the Europeans particularly have been telling the Chinese that they couldn't have a normal relationship with China as long as China was continuing to offer this support to Russia, and were putting pressure on them to put pressure on the Russians. The Chinese have consistently said that they don't really have that kind of influence with the Russians. But it seems that Macron, when he met Xi Jinping today, he did say that he was hoping that the two of them could work together to promote just peace and a settlement, and so that the both of them would support these peace efforts. Obviously, the French and the Europeans have got some reservations about the Trump approach to the peace process. And China, again, has a kind of slightly complicated approach to it, in that it's supporting, in theory, the Trump efforts. But they've also always said that the Europeans ought to be involved when it comes to a major kind of a peace plan. Mm.
People are reckoning that the 21st century will be the century of Asia if the 20th century was by and large the century of Europe, whether it was Europe kind of getting out of Africa or Europe becoming the dominant global influence. But now it's looking more and more like Asia will be the area for the 21st century evolution, be it in population, in the economics, and so on and so forth. But the question about Putin and whether or not he actually does want a peace, maybe to rebuild the economy at home and to give his citizens a break, or whether he will deliberately ply forward again and again in order to, I suppose, get the territory and try to rebuild the Soviet Union and its sphere of influence.
Yeah, I know that that's a view that's shared by a lot of very smart people in Western Europe, but I mean you would have to look at the record that in these nearly 4 years of war in Ukraine, they've managed to seize maybe 20% of Ukrainian territory. They haven't really made that much progress. And so the idea that that Putin, even in a few years, would be able to reconstitute the European or the Soviet Union seems a bit ambitious. And, he's clearly he's somebody who doesn't shy away from breaking international law and using violence. But nonetheless, there have to be some limitations to what to what he's able to do. And so I'm not quite sure that really, if there is a peace in Ukraine, that he's going to just regroup and set his sights on further conquest. I mean, I think that clearly it has taken a toll on the Russian economy and on Russian society. And so I would have thought that if there were to be a peace, especially if it involved allowing Russia back into the international economic system, that's possibly something that he would want. Mm.
It's interesting, and you reported on it, I'm sure, the meeting between Xi and Putin and Kim Jong-un, where the three of them were overheard chatting away. And, you know, the way Putin behaves, it's as if he believes he's going to live forever. And they were talking about transplanting and so on to keep them alive for much longer than the natural span. But, I mean, time is going to run out on Putin.
Yeah, and it tends to run out on all of us. And so, and I think it is, it will at some stage. There's an unfortunate record for some of those Russian leaders where it doesn't, their period in office doesn't always end at the moment of their choosing. But, I would have thought that, he's, as you say, he's not getting any younger. And it's true of actually all of these leaders of the major powers, the United States, China, and Russia. They're all over 70. In Trump's case, obviously, he's nearly 80. And so, I think over the next few years, if you're talking about kind of how the future is going to look, over the next 10 years, I would have thought we're going to see quite a bit of generational change in all of these places.
And there's an old adage, all political careers end in failure. How true it'll be in the case of those three gentlemen, I don't know. So the prospects for peace, will they advance at all with Macron talking to Xi and Putin talking to Modi?
I'm not sure that there's going to make that much difference, really. I think it does look as if the real action is taking place in Washington insofar as it's about, it's a kind of a shuttle diplomacy that's going on where the Americans, they speak to the Ukrainians and then they go back and then they speak to the Russians. And now they've spoken to the Russians and they're going to go back and speak to the Ukrainians again. And then at some stage, once they've got some kind of a framework, they might all find themselves in the same room. But it doesn't look really as if anybody, including the Europeans, has that much influence except for the Americans, the Ukrainians and the Russians.
Dennis Staunton, China correspondent, author of the Daily Global Briefing newsletter with the Irish Times. Dennis, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.